You ever watch this guy on television?
You all were not telling the truth, and you should not be trusted.
Congressman Matt Gaetz, thank you for what you did for your country tonight.
Be offended with the Democratic whip, not House Republicans.
Like a machine, Matt Gaetz.
Welcome to Hot Takes. This is Congressman Matt Gaetz. Let's talk about the news. Coronavirus-filled toilet plumes. That's in the news. The New York Times' Nouvelle Chic with a report today that details a study showing that coronavirus can actually spread in public bathrooms, that when you flush the toilet, apparently there is a 3-foot-tall geyser of aerosols that erupt into the air and actually can spread coronavirus from what one person has deposited into the toilet into an adjoining stall as a consequence of the flushing. So I know a lot of us have been thinking about different ways that life might change following coronavirus, but the public bathroom experience just might be one of them. China and India are seeing rising tensions on their border in the Himalayan mountains. These are countries with two of the largest armies in the world. They are nuclear powers. There's a report out from BBC News. Really, everyone has it, but this is a great report. We'll throw it up on social media that's got some of the maps showing this particular Galwan Valley. And it seems as though this conflict is not expressly driven by what's going on in the Himalayas as much as China's changing posture with their neighbors and throughout the region. As we know, China is becoming more aggressive in the South China Sea. They are utilizing their control over the marketplace more to put leverage on Southeast Asian countries economically. And you see with India, more development in this area. Modi was part of constructing this road into the Himalayas that China views as a threat because they see that India could move materiel, personnel to the area very rapidly. And there has been an escalation. So originally in the reporting, we saw claims that 3 Indian soldiers had died with China taking casualties as well. Now that number looks like 20 Indians were fatally wounded in this conflict. And it's unclear at this point how many Chinese were, but there is no doubt that you're going to see rising anti-Chinese sentiment in India. Right now, Prime Minister Modi is having to deal with a pretty extensive coronavirus crisis in his country as well. As we know, India and Pakistan have seen some of their territorial flare-ups emerging in the Kashmir, and so we're going to watch this situation very closely. But again, I can't say that it's specifically a consequence of this area in the Himalayas where historically there's been poor marking of borders. There have been territorial disputes. I guess it's an area with ice caps and rivers that mark the boundary, and as a consequence of the geography and the hydrology, those rivers and ice caps shift and change, which can create some resentment. And if there's a hot take here, it's the value of borders, clearly defined borders. They don't just help show where one country begins and one country ends, they also show where good ideas begin and end. That's why our country needs to prioritize our border to a greater extent. But right now, with India and China, we'd love to see de-escalation, and we'd love to see China as a better neighbor, both with India and with other countries in the region. The big tech tyranny continues now with Google looking to demonetize The Federalist. The Federalist is a fantastic news organization. It's where Molly Hemingway works. It's where Professor Margot Cleveland writes. And I can tell you that The Federalist was essential in the Russia hoax, breaking big stories, providing critical analysis. The Margot Cleveland piece on the double bind that Mueller was in regarding Russia's foreign interference in this election on behalf of Hillary Clinton and the DNC entanglement in that, and his refusal to investigate this collusion on the other side of the 2016 presidential election, was beautifully presented by Margot Cleveland. And in the days leading up to the Mueller testimony, that piece was really a central guiding document in how I crafted my questions. I'm actually going to post up on social media Margot Cleveland's piece on the Mueller double bind and the Democrats' collusion with Russia to really undermine our democracy. And so now you see Google engaging in this new form of big tech tyranny. It used to just be maybe a reduction in your search results, moving people away from your content and your platform. But now Google is becoming a lot more aggressive in their efforts to silence conservatives. And in this particular circumstance, if you are unable to generate ad revenue from your website, you have no website, you have no business. Just an enormous amount of Google's, or I should say the ad revenue on the internet, is driven by Google and pushed through Google. So in the coming weeks, the antitrust subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee is going to be putting out a big report on the way that digital platforms utilize their market power to hurt people. And we have antitrust laws in this country for a reason. I think we ought to use those antitrust laws. I think we ought to crack down on some of these tech platforms that are not fair to people. Here's Tucker Carlson's analysis from last night regarding big tech and the harm they're doing to our country.
In all of human history, no single entity has ever had more control over information than Google does right now. So if you're worried about the concentration of power in the hands of a few unaccountable actors, and you very much should be, nobody has more unchecked power than Google does. This afternoon, NBC News decided to use some of Google's power to shut down a couple of its competitors. Power is useful for that. An NBC employee called Adele Macomo Frazier forwarded Google executives a screed from a left-wing activist group in England denouncing two sites, Zero Hedge and The Federalist, as, quote, racist. Google immediately took the bait, of course. The company threatened to ban both news organizations from Google's ad platform. In other words, to cut off their revenue. Thanks to Congress, Google does have immunity. And that's one of the main reasons that Google's founders are some of the richest and most powerful people in the world, because Congress allowed them to be. Senator Josh Hawley pointed this out today. Let's hope he and his colleagues act soon to revoke this privilege. If Google will not extend 230 protections to others, Google should not enjoy those protections itself, obviously.
And so our friends at The Federalist are fighting back. I hope you'll visit their website. I hope that you'll review their content and share it, because what the left is starting to realize is that if we all put out the truth, if we work together to amplify the truth, if we invite the country to participate in that discussion and review the evidence, well, then we have a very compelling case to make. And we have a very high probability of victory, not only in politics and elections, but on the public policy causes that we care about, to improve the family, improve the country, to push back against all this effort to demonize America and make us believe that America is somehow a racist, terrible nation. That's absurd. This is the greatest nation that has ever existed. No apologies. Now let's make sure that the folks out in Silicon Valley are not able to redefine the political debate and redefine the truth. I believe that today there will be new legislation introduced in the Senate by Senator Tom Cotton, Senator Josh Hawley, and Senator Marco Rubio. Three fantastic senators, three people I know and have worked with. And wait till you see the legislation today regarding Section 230 that they're unleashing. Maybe I'll sponsor that and introduce it over in the House. But it's a good sign that we're getting our Senate engaged, because if we do not win this fight over cancel culture, over shadow banning, over demonetizing conservative places on the internet, then there is no future for the conservative movement for young people. And I believe that we'll win the argument. We just have to have a chance at a fair debate. That's what America is founded on. And I'm excited about the fact that we're going to start demanding that fairness and that equity to vindicate the rights of people to speak their mind and to engage in productive dialogue. Today, the House Judiciary Committee took up the Democrats' bill on policing reform. Here's Republican lead Jim Jordan making the Republican case to stand with the police.
The vast majority of police officers do a great job. They risk their lives every single day to protect our communities. They're the individuals who rushed into the Twin Towers on 9/11. They're the individuals here on Capitol Hill who protect us every single day. They're the guys back in our communities who put on that uniform every single shift and risked their lives, and we should remember that as we develop policy here in the Judiciary Committee. And finally, fourth, defunding the police, dismantling police departments is one of the craziest public policy proposals I have ever heard.
Law enforcement do so many great things in our communities. Here's my effort to try to balance the needs of a community to have faith and confidence in law enforcement with the safety and effectiveness of our law enforcement officers.
If the overall theme is to keep police engaged and proactive in their communities, you're going to find the president and Republicans in Congress very willing to work with the Democrat majority in the House on those issues. However, if the goal is to keep the cop in the car, if the goal is to have police so stripped of all immunities, so deprived of all of the use of force that they might need to preserve their own lives, if the goal is to have police essentially on a level playing field with cartels and criminals when it comes to their equipment, then we would be unable to support that, because that would be the manifestation of an effort to defund, dismantle, and demoralize the police, not an effort to improve the police. We want to reform, we want to improve, we want to work together, and we hope our Democrat colleagues will take this amendment and others that are offered in good faith, and that you'll speak out against the dangerous efforts to demoralize those who are serving us.
The debate got a little heated with Democrats at times. Here's a little bit of that sound.
I would yield to any of my colleagues on the Republican side who can unequivocally say, as we calibrate where we are right now, that Black Lives Matter.
Thank the gentleman for yielding. Does the gentleman believe that all lives matter as well? I think Black Lives Matter. I think all lives matter.
Reclaiming my time. Can anyone on the Republican side say unequivocally Black Lives Matter?
Unequivocally all lives matter? Why is that a problem to acknowledge?
Reclaiming my time.
But in will the gentleman yield?
In jobs, in education.
Will the gentleman
Black
yield?
Black lives matter. I'm
I
sad
can say
to say
unequivocally,
no one on the other
Black
side
lives
say
do
it.
Matter. Unequivocally, yeah. Black lives
and
do
I
matter.
And I'll yield to Mr.
Every life is precious, God-given, and Black lives matter.
Is the science of America polluted by China and other foreign interests? We see our colleagues in the Congress focus so much on foreign interference in elections. But what about foreign interference in science itself and in the advice we get from our public health officials? There is a really explosive piece of journalism in sciencemag.org by Jeffrey Mervis. And in the sciencemag.org piece, there is reporting that 54 scientists at the National Institute of Health have been removed from their jobs. 93% refuse to disclose their relationship with China. There are 285 active grants totaling $164 million that could be impacted by these terminations and the work of these scientists. And in 5% of the cases, even the peer review process appears to be impacted. Now, again, that doesn't sound huge, but I mean, look, if 5% of the advice that you got from public health officials over the last few months was bogus or informed by a desire to serve another country, that's still a substantial amount. And again, that peer review process is the mechanism by which we ensure that the work that's going on absolutely is accurate and that it can result in sound public policy choices by lawmakers. So I'm always deeply troubled when we see just how insidious and how determined some of our adversaries are to impact our country. I think a lot of them try to prey on our weakness and try to utilize our openness as a vulnerability. And it's one of the reasons why we've got to remain diligent in our fight against China. I don't know why we are allowing Chinese students to come into this country and study some of the most sensitive, you know, rocket propulsion, physics, nuclear science, and then return back to the CCP and to the other allies of China like North Korea to create problems in the world. The American education system should not be used against our country. And too often, the colleges are in on it. The colleges and universities love getting this money from China. They love sending their professors to China to study and get all kind of perks. They love having Chinese associated or loosely affiliated entities fund endowed professorships. And now we see what the end result is. We end up with scientists in our own government that have these links that have to be terminated. And it really calls into question whether or not the infrastructure of American public health is truly serving Americans. I think there's legislation introduced by Senator Rubio and others to try to impact the extent to which our country is resilient against this new offensive threat from China. Senator Tom Cotton spoke recently in the media about the types of education platforms that potentially should be restricted.
It's a scandal to me that we have trained so many of the Chinese Communist Party's brightest minds to go back to China to compete for our jobs, to take our business, and ultimately to steal our property and design weapons and other devices that can be used against the American people. So I think we need to take a very hard look at the visas that we give to Chinese nationals to come to the United States to study, especially at the postgraduate level in advanced scientific and technological fields. You know, if Chinese students want to come here and study Shakespeare and the Federalist Papers, that's what they need to learn from America. They don't need to learn quantum computing and artificial intelligence from America.
Thank you, Senator Cotton, for raising this issue. I think the political correctness police are likely to descend at any moment. But putting America first means putting American science first, and it means not allowing our scientists or our universities or our research entities to be sold out to the highest bidder. Retail is on the rise in the American economy. Apple News' Abra Batrani and Rachel Siegel reporting that retail sales spiked almost 18% in May. Now, they went down close to 9% in April. They went down close to 15% in March. So a rebound in retail is fantastic to see. I think it's a leading indicator for the economy, because I think that if people are spending, that shows consumer confidence, a belief that there will be some semblance of normal returned. Obviously, we've got major problems with the unemployment rate. We've got to get people onboarded back to jobs. I think our Republican senators who've pointed out this bizarre disincentive where people are making more in some cases on unemployment than they would had they taken their job back, you know, that's got to be fixed. But consumer spending, you know, drives about 70% of America's economy. And so with more of that occurring, I think you start to help on the jobs numbers, you start to help on the investment numbers. In all, consumers spent $485 billion in May on retail goods, groceries, and gas, and 17% of sales, about $86.4 billion, were purchased online. So still a lot of e-commerce, but as people get out and engage in retail in person, we think that you could even see those ratios shift further. So let's hope that we can get this great economy that President Trump built back on track, and let's hope that rising retail sales, rising consumer confidence is an important leading indicator. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to subscribe so that you get updates with daily episodes. Give us a rating and a review. Let us know what you think. I'll be on tomorrow to let you know what I think with more hot takes.